greetings. Welcome to Confessing Blues. I'm your host, Jim Ange Anderson. On today's show, we feature the dynamic duo of Corey Dennison and Jerry Hunt from the Corey Dennison Band. They're here to celebrate the release of their brand new CD, a sophomore effort on Delmark Records called Night After Night. Let's roll! Corey Dennison, Jerry Hunt, welcome back to the Farmhouse Studios.
Well, thank you, Jim.
And exciting news, you have a brand new record out, Night After Night. Can you talk about the record?
Well, what do you want to know?
Well, it's impressive that it came out a year after your first release, the Corey Dennison Band on Delmark. Seems like a continuation of what you guys were doing. I mean, what went into, you know, the song selection or the songwriting?
I think the record is a great example of how the band's grown over the last year since the first record. There's like with the first record, there was something on there for everybody. Again, this record, there's something on there for everybody. I think it's more soulful than the first record. There's a lot more soul-oriented
Agreed,
tunes.
Yeah. And,
it's shown like the songwriting has grown. There's actually some bridges in certain songs. Like there's more singing from everybody, like background vocals, and you know we worked a lot of like different arrangements out, and you know everybody had a little piece of it. Like Joel added some percussion ideas, and you know again Jerry did some organ stuff, and you know Nick walked off on a bass solo in the middle of a song, and but no, it was a fun project to do.
How about you, Jerry? Your thoughts on the record, putting it together? What was different, maybe from the first record?
Well, just like the first record, this Night After Night is a representation of what the band does live. I can, you know, honestly say that when you hear a Corey Dennison Band record, you're going to hear those songs live. If you want to take the band home with you, that's what you're going to get. The thing about Night After Night that I like a lot is exactly what Corey said. It shows how the band has grown. I feel that there's some really strong songwriting on there, but at the same time with the six covers that are on there, however many there are, I don't remember, you still see that, you know, our sound and our capabilities are not just limited to our own material. We can take other people's material and make it sound fresh and new as well. You know, not to say that the covers that are on there are, you know, Chestnuts or Hackneyed or by any means, but at the same time, it, you know, there's a right way and a wrong way to kind of rearrange other people's materials, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, like, for instance, you did the Syl Johnson song, Stuck in Chicago, and
right.
I think sometimes you hear people want to do something note for note, but you know, why do that? So it's nice to kind of put your own imprint on.
Well, to be honest, Jim, like that was a tune that we did hear Syl do. We actually weren't aware of the Kate Brothers version from the get-go. We only discovered that once we started researching the publishing behind the song. But basically that was sort of our answer to, you know, the ubiquitous cries for Mustang Sally. You know, that was, it's a groove, it's just kind of a funky, like, groove in C, and, you know, we kind of approached it like, you know, well, how would what would Magic Slim do? And you know, just as a starting point, and then we kind of all put our own things on it, you know, especially like, you know, on the outro, the little vocals, like we throw in some very specific geographical references to where our drummer lives, where Nick, our old bass player, actually Joel lives in Nick's old apartment. And, you know, and then other like kind of, you know, little markers that are familiar to us and kind of help make the song our own.
That's cool. What other covers you did? A Tyrone Davis cover too? Can you talk about that?
Corey's a lot more versed in the soul stuff than I am, but it's an LV Johnson song.
Okay.
And it's interesting because LV's version is cool, and then Tyrone's version is cool, and I think that, but they're very different from each other in terms of arrangement and what's going on. And I think somehow, like, we've kind of bridged between the two of them, but kind of made it our own. I mean, I love playing that song personally because I like to think of myself as, from time to time, as a white Nile Rodgers. It's a fun style of guitar to play, and it's not something that people, like, I feel like, at least in our scene, like, actively seek out, like, trying to just do, like, really cool rhythm guitar. You know what I mean? Like, and that's, that song just really, and plus, I mean, I remember the first time I heard it was actually that video on YouTube of Corey playing with Carl at the mines. And there's, Stranded?
Stranded,
and then they go into Are You Serious? And I remember hearing that chorus for the first time. And I was like, what is that?
Sure.
And why are we not playing that? Because we need to.
I really
mean for you? Serious. Are you having fun? I don't want no one but you. Serious. Are you the one? Baby, baby, baby. Are you serious? Are you having fun? Real passion. Are you serious? Are you the one?
That was one of my, that was always the highlight of my night. I mean, when I played with the old man, there were certain songs that I always looked for, that I was always like, even if I was having a bad day, there's just something that he would do that would snap me right out of it. And that was always one of them. And, you know, since playing with Carl, I got to meet a lot of those guys, and, you know, like Platinum and Otis Clay and all those guys. And, you know, I've played it so many times that a lot of people were like, why aren't you doing this song? And I was like, well,
and the thing about it is, and the other thing, and I can say about all the other covers on the album, is it's not just random covers we picked of songs that we might like. These are songs that people at the Mines and at our other gigs, they always react to. And Are You Serious is one of them. I mean, and that was when we started playing that, the staff at the Mines were the first ones to like, be like, hey, can you play that Serious song again? Play that again. Cool. We want to hear that.
Yeah. Like, because, you know, I played there for so long, and, like, you know, they loved my band, and they loved Carl's band. And, like, there were certain songs, like I said, that I did with the old man that I had, you know, really key parts to that everybody loved. And, you know, I got those key parts from him. So I was like, you know, one night we were sitting there, and one of the waitresses was like, hey, I want to hear Are You Serious? Can you do that? And I was like, yeah, okay, we can do it. And when we did it, the place just lit up, you know.
It sounds like the whole band is singing in the parts on this song in particular, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Very nice.
Yep. And that's a beautiful thing, because there's not a lot of guys out there on the scene now that are, you know, that are singing. And there's, you know, like, I want them to sing. You know, I mean, that's like, you got to sing.
If you're doing R&B, the more voices, the better.
The more voices, right? The better, yeah. The bigger you sound, the better.
And then you don't have to pay backup singers.
That's either. Right.
That's right. Well, we were supposed to get double scale, right?
That's right. That's right. So you do C major times two.
That's right.
Well, how about some of the original songs? I know you guys definitely, on the last record, it seemed to be a 50-50 collaboration.
Yeah.
I mean, is that still the same model?
Yeah. I mean, on the last record, there were two songs that existed before the band did. Two of mine, and then in this case one of the songs existed before the band did, and that was Phone Keeps Ringing.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's largely the same this time around. I mean, it depends on the tune as to how it comes about, but generally speaking, it's you know, if it's not one thing, it's another. So
can you give an example of how one of these songs came about?
Well, my favorite story is actually Shivers. Remember that?
Yeah.
We were gassing up at the truck stop over there in by Burns Harbor, and we're on the way to the gig or whatever. And, you know, gas up, get back in the car, and I'm like, man, I'm cold with the shivers. And we're like, hey, that's kind of catchy. I think Corey was like, oh, that's kind of good.
I like that.
Cool.
So then we kind of like, you know, kicked around some ideas, you know, tap them down on your notepad and your phone or whatever, and then kind of, you know, refine it over a couple whatever and decide what the groove is going to be. And then, you know, the thing that's cool about our band is we all respect and know the tradition, and we have the knowledge of the tradition. We know it just, and we know it well enough to break the rules. And so in this case, Shivers is interesting because if you notice, the four chord is minor. You know, it's a regular lump-to-lump shuffle, but we do a minor four chord because that's when Corey says, I get the shivers, and then you have like a really cold
impact, yeah,
a really right. cold sounding chord voicing up there that really, like, it, you know, gives you the shivers. So you know, we try to find little things like that to kind of stick into the songs and have an emotional impact that way.
Yeah. I like one of my favorites is It's So Easy.
Yeah.
Because of the drum beat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, it's heavy, right?
It's just, he can explain the drum beat better than anything, but like we wrote the song and we were discussing, what were we discussing? We were discussing drum patterns and like, just like, for some reason I got hooked on the Purdy Shuffle. And like I was watching these videos, like Purdy has a really cool instructional video on YouTube. And we were talking about it, and then for somehow or another it got flipped around, and I was like, what if we did A, B, and C? What if we did B instead of A in this song? And Jerry's like, ooh, wait a minute, hold on. So we were listening to something.
Yeah, the song was kind of conceived of as kind of like a kind of smooth uptown, like Fenton Robinson kind of a thing, obviously. And I always remembered playing with Glenn Davis up at the Silver Moon, and there's one song, and I don't remember, I think it's Worked This Way Through the World. Anyway, this drummer, Jim Gregus, played like the shuffle this really ignorant way, and it was basically, instead of having a kick drum on either every beat, you know, quarter notes or shuffling the kick drum, he would play the kick drum on this particular song along with the snare. So it was the kick drums only on the two and the four. And I always remembered like, well, that's kind of weird, but it kind of works. And so the first time we suggested it to Joel,
he suggested,
quote unquote, you see the air, hey man, you know, he was skeptical. And so was Nick, you know, because, it's nice to have that one, the bass drum on the one. That's where you identify. Well, the thing is, you know, I do a lot of reading, and I know Corey does too, about the psychological effects of music and rhythm. And, you know, I know that it's not what you play that makes people dance. It's the spaces between the notes, because physically, you know, we want to fill that space between the notes. That's what makes things funky. So like not having the one there, like, has this effect, and we see it every time we play this song. Like when Joel's hitting the snare drum and the bass drum on the two and the four, like for some reason it just, even if people are sitting down, they're like, they have to move their hips or they have to do whatever.
Because so it adds kind of a funk to it. Right?
Oh yeah. Because it's do, you know, and it's like, yeah, it's this weird kind of thing. And it's not something you could predict.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I know. It's, he was so against it. And like every time we played it before I would notice something. I'd be like, yo, he's not doing the right beat. Hey man, do the right beat. That's what we'd hear every time.
Sure.
And I was like, man, just watch the people. And then one night when we did it.
That's right at the Mines. I remember her.
We did it at the Mines. Yeah.
I remember
her. We did it one night at the Mines, and I said, Joel, play the right beat and watch. And he did. He did the, okay, fine. So he did it, and then there was this woman, and he was like,
Her man like the sexiest lap dance we've ever seen.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. He's like, I understand now. I'm like, there you go. And he hasn't changed it since. It's great.
Thank you. bad day. My mind don't know what to do. When I'm tired and I can't work no more, when I'm tired and I just can't work no more. She says, gonna get your rest, Daddy. I'm going down to the store. Brings me white bread and bologna and soda in a can. She knows exactly what I need, 'cause I'm a loving man. To love a little woman just like you, if I'm having a bad day, Mama, you know exactly what. Scratching, my baby's right on the case. And when I need that loving, oh, she see it all on my face. It's so easy to love a little woman just like you. If I'm having a bad day, Mama, you know just what to do. Oh, she really does, man.
you're mentioning the Kingston Mines. You guys have a regular twice a week gig there. So a lot of the music has been probably explored and created on the stage, right?
Oh, yeah.
And in addition, you probably, I know, Jerry, you told me maybe you did 300 gigs last year.
306, to be precise.
Yeah.
So.
And we were well on our way to past that, actually. A couple months ago, we were talking, and it's, I think Jerry had done some kind of, he was talking, and he's like, man, we've already did, like, you know, almost 230 gigs, you know. And it's, I was like, what? He's like, oh, yeah.
So, you know, hence the title, Night After Night.
Yep.
Exactly.
Our first 4 days off. And in a row, were on the Labor Day weekend. That was the first in a year.
Well, that was your. I actually had a gig,
of course,
and it was good. It was good.
Well, I guess the question begs itself: after that much work, what do you do when you're not off?
Nothing.
Yeah,
but it kills me, because I couldn't sit still. Like, I was, I try not to listen to music. I ended up listening to music. I tried not to think about playing music.
Sure.
I ended up playing music.
And your body's telling you, you're supposed to be somewhere.
Yeah.
It's 9 o'clock.
Yeah,
you're
my body's telling me I'm supposed to be somewhere. I'm not falling asleep till 6 a.m., you know? And
right.
I'm like, oh, my God, this is terrible.
Yeah, well, you know, I think we just become used to the vibrations, you know, feeling the vibrations and the... And well, and getting, you know, the love from the crowd, you know, I mean, that's a big part of it too.
I will say that on the 4 days off, I did not go to any of the clubs that we play or go and see band or anything. I did go see the Blue Man Group, and because a good friend of mine, two of my good friends are Blue in the Chicago mm-hmm. production, and you know, it was good to see them. I met them when I was on the cruise ship, and you know, it was awesome to see the Chicago production versus the cruise ship production, and that was the only quote unquote musical theatrical thing that I did, and the rest of the time was spent sleeping and, you know, driving around. I went to the museums, and I went and gorged myself with oysters and bothered him a little bit. I didn't know I totally forgot he had a gig. That was awesome.
Yep.
It was so nice not to play. My hands were nice and relaxed.
Yeah.
It was great.
So it's good to get a break.
Oh, yeah.
Every 9 months, right?
That's right.
Back to the record. A song I really like is Misty. And there's a guest artist on there. Can you tell the story about that song?
Not really a guest artist. Actually, the Corey had come up with the main chords for the song. And then I think I provided that little walk down part.
Yeah.
So we had that sitting there for a while, and we went down to the Blues Blast Music Awards in Champaign, and our friends from Kilbourne Alley wisely had booked studio time for that weekend or whatever it was, because all these blues artists were going to be in town.
Sure.
And they said, hey, why don't you guys come out, you know, we'll lay down some tracks or whatever. So they actually did a really cool recording session with Anthony Geraci, Monster Mike Welsh, Henry Gray, Bob Corator. And then they had me and Corey come in, and Joel joined us. Nick couldn't join us for the session. But so, you know, we're sitting there. We're like, well, what are we going to do?
Yeah. They're like, hey, man, what do you want to do? And I'm like, I don't know.
So much to my chagrin, and I know you remember this, Corey pulls out this riff. And I'm like.
The look on his face was like, dude.
I was like, that's our stuff. Right. What are you doing? Like, why are you giving this away right now? And Andy's like, well, Andy Duncanson from the Kilbourne Alley Blues Band, I mean, is a brilliant lyricist and singer.
Fantastic singer.
So, yeah. You know, of course, he had lyrics that fit the tune perfectly. And then we kind of collaboratively came up with the epic bridge in the song.
Yeah.
And then, we just, you know, let the tape roll. And so Misty appears on their album, Tolono Tapes, the first iteration of it. So then, you know, we kept playing the song because we loved it.
Yeah.
And
that was part of the deal. Remember, that was, he was like, he tried to, you know, he was like, hey, man, let me pay for the session. I said, hey, man, I'll tell you what, you know, I'll tell you what, how about you guys put Misty on your record and make sure we got credit, and we'll put it on our record, and you guys get credit. All right, man, that's cool.
So it was a collaboration.
Yeah. And like, they're both really good versions. You know, it's just, I mean, they're two totally different animals.
Right.
You know, that's one of my favorite songs to play live, actually.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting to hear both versions, because the Kilbourne one is like, it's literally brand new. Like, it's been played three times.
Sure.
And so there's a cool freshness to it, to that arrangement. And plus, you get the interplay between Andy and Corey sing on that song. They each take a verse and then join each other in the chorus, which is amazing. And then our version is more like, okay, well, you know, these guys have obviously, it's, I don't want to say slick, but it's tight. Mm-hmm. It's a lot tighter. And then I added some organ on it, which kind of helped it all gel together a little bit.
You're no good. outside Decatur. That's where Misty stay at.
I've had a couple people mention the tambourine. So there you go. And that the tambourine was actually an interesting... Steve Wagner and I had a series of emails specifically about the tambourine.
Funny.
Just you know, getting it just right.
The devil's in the details.
Well, right? You know, that's what happens sometimes.
Talking about Steve, what else, you know, working with Steve Wagner at Del Mar as a producer, what else does Steve sort of bring to the table? How is the working with him? Because you guys are kind of produce the record.
Yeah.
But what does Steve bring to the table?
Steve loves the music.
Yeah.
That is the most important thing. He loves the music, and he appreciates the band.
Yep.
So
he brings us our freedom. Like, he gives us our freedom.
Mm-hmm.
We can literally.
He knows that we're prepared already.
Yeah.
He just let us do our thing, and there were, you know, there were definitely times where he had some really good suggestions. And there were other times where he was like, well, you know, this is what I think, but if this is what you guys want to do, then just do that.
That was really good.
You know?
Yeah.
It was kind of a good impression.
That was
wasn't
great. It? Yeah, dig it.
So night after night, you guys are prepared. When you go in the studio, that the song is basically arranged and ready to go.
The only song that I can say that wasn't like, that we hadn't really played much was Nothing's Too Good for My Baby, simply because we just didn't really have time. We had the lyrics for a long time, but never really had a groove for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we did it in the studio or whatever, and it, you know, came out great. So there you go.
And so a picture just popped up on your phone of a performance in Belgium. Can you talk about your experience in Belgium?
Going to Belgium, going to Europe in general is awesome. Going to Europe with your band is something that's few and not really happening these days. You know, they're taking, you know, individuals or certain people, you know. And when we went as a unit, it was a milestone for me because I was like, sweet, you know, this is something that I've always wanted to do. And that, you know, I'm can't wait to tell the old man about it. You know? And we went down there and we did a one-off. We did two shows. We played a birthday party and for a guy that come and seen us at the mines. And then we played a place in Liège called the Blue Onion.
Blue Sphere.
Blue Sphere. And the guy was, let's just say we stayed in a prison.
It wasn't the best of accommodations, but we had a really nice gig and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, the gig was amazing. The gig was far more than what he expected.
So, you know, yeah, that was the first trip. The second trip was very different.
Yeah, the second trip. So then when we went back, Frankie, which is our guy in Belgium that we, you know.
Frankie Brunil?
Yeah, Frankie Brunil.
That's the guy.
That, you know, Frankie's our liaison, you know, and he put together this little tour, and it was amazing. And one of the places that we played was the city theater in Bruges.
Right.
And he was raised like, I cannot wait for you to sing in this theater. And we played there, and then we played the first night we were in Mechelen, our home Beck, and it was like an outside festival thing. And
yeah, that was fun.
That was really fun. And the opening band was Freddie Starks, the drummer. Used to play drums with Johnny Guitar Watson.
Cool.
Hey, man, nothing in a Weka. And So that was a really fun, and his band sounded great. He had a great band, and we hung out, and then we went to Bruges and played the theater, which we got to the theater, and it was like, oh, I mean, you've seen the picture.
Oh, yeah,
I mean,
beautiful.
It's an old opera house, basically.
Right. Yeah, and like, that was like one of probably the coolest experiences I've had so far, you know, with these guys. Then the next night we were... at a club.
Yeah, just a small little club. It was cool.
Which was really awesome, you know, and Freddie popped up there. And but, like, the sound guy is what made him a trip. The sound guy at the club made him a trip. What was his name?
In Zottegem?
Yeah.
I don't remember. We'll just call him
Bart.
We'll just call him Sparky.
Yeah, he was definitely a Sparky. And, when we got there, the club was no bigger than this room.
It was tiny.
You know, and he had everything mic'd.
No, they had subs, they had mains, they had...
Subs, mains.
I mean...
Four monitors.
It was... Nice. We're like, man, we could do this gig and just plug a mic into a guitar amp. We'd sure. be fine.
Yeah, it was awesome. And he had, like, everything cranked.
It was palladium rock.
It was, yeah. It was like... I don't know if you've ever seen or heard the Pearl Jam live in Atlanta. Okay. That's what it was like, bro. And Jerry's like, and like, we're sound checking.
I put a stop to that, all that real
we're
quick.
We're at sound check, and right. I'm like, I walked off the stage. I was like, and Jerry's like, yo, turn everything off.
Yeah, I did. I said, hey, man, do me a favor. Just listen to the band first.
Right.
Listen to the band, and then add in what you need to add in. Oh. Okay, I can do this.
But I'd like to have this. No.
No, listen. So we made him listen to the band, and he's like, wow, you guys like mix yourselves, huh? We're like, yeah.
That's the way we do it in Chicago.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, these guys want to do like a three-hour sound check. We don't need a three-hour sound check, man. Just plug in the vocal mics and let's go.
Yeah.
And, give me some kick. Give me some vocal. Right. Let's get out of here.
And I told him, I said, it was Bart.
Yeah.
Bart Simpson. I called him Bart Simpson. And I told him, I said, look, man. I see you touch anything, two chops to the throat. And the owner of the club was like, yeah. You know, the owner was so impressed with the band after the first set.
Oh, it was like the first three songs or something.
He was so impressed, he pulled Frankie to the side and said, look, I'm moving my headliner to my festival back one, and I want you guys on the festival. And when we got done, we were on break. Frankie's like, he wants you on the festival. I was like, okay,
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, in May, we're going to go play.
Cool.
Yeah, and the sound guy was just like, he wanted to touch it. He wanted to touch it. He was like trying. I was like, two chops to the throat.
We could say you guys are big in Belgium. You won an award?
You mean the French one?
Was French. Okay.
Yeah, that was
last year.
Can
you talk
year.
About that?
Yeah, in January. Well, we heard that. So the Jazz Academy in Paris gives awards every year. For mainly jazz, different categories of jazz, but they have a blues category and a soul category. And they've been giving these awards out since the mid-60s. And previous recipients of this award include, like, basically all of our heroes.
Yeah, Lightning Hopkins,
Robert
was the first
Johnson,
one.
Bobby Bland, nice. B.B. King, Albert King. Collins.
Yeah.
The last time a Delmark artist won this prize was in the mid-90s. Jimmy Burns won it. I think Dave Spector was nominated maybe a couple years ago, but we got an email and we had won this prize.
Prix de Blues.
And it was, you know, the more we researched it, the more we realized what a big deal it was. And it really was. So they flew Corey and myself over, and we had a couple local guys back. We were only playing two songs, mm-hmm. so... couple local guys back us up, and the majority of their program was jazz, either contemporary or traditional, and excellent French musicians or whatever, and
like heavy hitters.
Yeah,
it was really great. And so we did what we do, two songs.
Yeah, two songs.
We did a slow blues, and I think we did Don't Say You're Sorry.
Don't Say You're Sorry and A Fool's Goodbye.
Oh, right, from the first Delmark album, and at the reception afterwards. You know, everybody's, you know, they were, and in true French fashion, you know, they specified that, like, you know, you guys need to come to the cocktail reception because we're uncorking this fabulous vintage of,
which
you know,
I still have
the wine or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so we're like, oh yeah, we'll be there. And what this woman came up to us, we're talking with somebody. I think it was probably Tonton from, the magazine, but, so from Soulbag. But this lady comes up to us, and she said, I love what you guys did. So much life and feeling.
So much life.
Compared to the funeral that preceded it.
Thank you. Thank you for bringing the life. This funeral.
Typical French existentialist hyperbole. You
right.
know, like.
And then the next morning, we were down in the
oh, that's right.
At the hotel. We were
yeah.
at breakfast. And this older gentleman came down and he was sitting there and I can't remember his name. It was
I can't either, but he played with like Miles Davis.
He played horn with Miles Davis and so many, and who else? There was another
yeah,
person.
Yeah, he had a laundry list of guys.
Yeah, and he was like top dog, you know. And he said, don't change a thing.
Sweet.
And I was like, excuse me? He's like, don't change a thing. You have something that's beautiful. This other stuff that happened, useless. And I was like, ooh, thanks, man.
But it was wonderful. And Francois Lacharme and everybody that brought us over were just so hospitable. They even rented a guitar for Corey.
And, yeah, because the airline broke my headstock.
Yeah, they did. And, you know, it was really a wonderful experience.
So will you guys be going back to France?
Well, that's a matter for debate, Jim, because we want to go on our own terms.
Mm-hmm.
We have had offers to go over, but it hasn't quite met with our principles yet. So I'm sure we'll be over there, in the near future. Just we're in a position now where we can call the shots, and that's what we're doing.
Great.
Yeah.
You want to bring the whole band, and
we want to bring the whole. That's the main issue. Yes.
Yeah. So your people are talking to their people at this point. Right?
We are the people.
We are the people.
We the people.
You know, we got some great things on the books, though. We're going, like I said, we're going back to Belgium twice. We're going to the Netherlands and to Belgium again next year.
Then Luxembourg.
Finland is pending, and then we have Switzerland in 2 years. They like to plan ahead. The Swiss do.
Yeah. That's so great.
We still have yet to go to Canada.
We got some great stuff.
Yeah, we got a lot of good stuff.
You could drive to Canada.
I know, but I want to take the band to Canada because I used to go to...
Yeah, well, you know.
See, my goal is to go to the places that Carl took me.
Sure.
And so I really do want to get to France and have the guys. You know, Jerry's been there several times. I've been there several times. And I would like to have the band there.
Yeah, I saw that the new record is on the Grammy ballot. Can you talk about that? That's momentous, right? That's huge. It's like being in the All-Star game or something, right?
That's exciting. You know, it's one out of 66 other nominees, and it's an honor to be included.
Yeah.
The other one was included.
Yeah,
too.
The first record was also on the Grammy ballot, and when I heard that the new record was put on the Grammy ballot, I was like, whoa, you know, that's 2 years in a row.
Two feathers in the cap.
Right,
exactly.
Yeah, it's a personal accolade, you know what I mean? Like, it's something that I'm like, whew, sweet. Yeah.
Certainly not something I ever expected.
Yeah, I never expected it at all.
It's great. Jerry, I know that when you guys, the band has a night off and you're working.
Right.
You do some other things. I know I just saw you recently with Ralph and Kenny Kinsey and Rocco.
Yep, yep.
Also, just recently, you did a sort of a blues in the schools program.
Yeah, that's right. The Crossroads Blues Society out in my hometown, Rockford, Illinois, has had me come out several times to present, a program of both music and a little bit of education to elementary school kids. And this is the second time I've done it with my pal Ronnie Schellest from Denver, Colorado, who's my favorite living harmonica player and just an all-around great guy. And so I saw this kind of weekend of gigs kind of shaping up, and I reached out to the Blues Society and said, well, hey, you know, I'm thinking about bringing Ronnie out for the weekend. What if we did a blues in the schools on Wednesday? And they were very receptive of it. And so the first presentation we did was in Oregon, Illinois, and that was for 750 kids.
Fun.
Which was amazing. We got them all clapping and engaged in the music for 45 minutes. And, you know, the teachers got a little break, and the kids were exposed to a certain kind of music maybe they don't hear every day, which is always amazing. The second presentation we did was on the west side of Rockford for a very multicultural 350 students. And that was fantastic. It was in an auditorium that was acoustically very good. And we really enjoyed that as well. I mean, Ronnie ran up and down the aisles giving high fives, and the kids really enjoyed it. I mean, that was a tougher one because it was the period right before dismissal.
Sure.
So it's harder to hold their attention and everything. But I think, you know, we did a really good job. And that's always a joy to present the music to kids like that. And it's rewarding when they come up to you afterwards and they say, you know, my dad has a guitar, and or I love the harmonica, or are you married? You know, it's really special, and you might not reach all of them, but you can definitely tell the ones that are really fascinated by the music, and that's its own reward.
And that's the next generation music makers or even music fans. Right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, they might. Who's to say that, you know, that wasn't some sort of a seminal moment in one of their lives? You don't know, and that's kind of both the great reward and responsibility of that situation.
We're getting close to the new year. I mean, I know you talk about some different tours you have lined up. Any other things you have lined up in the future, or plans that things you'd like to do?
Well, I think what we've talked about doing is kind of leveraging the talent in our band a little more. Both Aaron and Joel, like we said, are extremely talented musicians and students of music, and I think we'd like to kind of enlist their talents a little more in terms of arrangements, perhaps involving other instruments and things like that going forward, and maybe expanding our repertoire even further. And then as far as the band is concerned, it's what we call turtle mode. We keep doing what we're doing, and the right opportunities will find us.
Yep. I think we'll, in the future, with the new year coming up, we'll go into turtle mode 2.1. You know?
That's right.
we're in enhanced turtle mode.
But, we've always got something cooking here and there. We enjoy collaborating with other musicians when it makes sense, and yeah. You know, we're just kind of taking each night as it comes.
What do you say we do a little collaboration right now?
So what are we gonna do, Virginia?
Virginia.
Virginia?
So tired, babe.
right here, Jim.
Baby.
I'm gone.